Okay, so it's good to be back. We're going to talk about tonight why women do not have authority to speak in public assemblies or the church in an authoritative way, and why that role belongs to the man. And so we're going to do that this evening. The first and primary text will be in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And I want to call attention to 1 Corinthians 14. Then I'm going to do something before we go into the details here and talk about some things that should not have happened. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 33. Verses 33 through 35. Let's look at this passage together. 1 Corinthians 14, 33 through 35. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Notice that phrase, in all churches of the saints, not just at Corinth. Let your women keep silence in the churches. Notice the word plural, churches. For it is not permitted unto them to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And then verse 35, and if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for women to speak in the church. There are some contextual ideas here, but there is a clear declaration that women serve a purpose in a role that we'll talk about. Let's talk about some women in the Bible. I want to go through this without much comment, just to remind you of how women who have overstepped their roles have gotten us into trouble. And the men who followed along with this didn't do us any favors either. So it's not just a pick on women session. Eve, Adam and Eve. Eve stepped ahead of her proper order and influenced Adam into sin. The Bible clearly teaches this. Genesis 3. 1 through 6, verse 12 and verse 17, she was deceived by the serpent and then gave the fruit to Adam. Genesis 3, 12, Adam will say, the woman you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate. Paul will mention this in 1 Timothy 2 in the New Testament, verses 13 through 14, and talks about how Adam was formed first and Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. So you have an abusive role here, somehow, some way, in the sense that Adam either was too tolerant, too ignorant, didn't understand, doesn't matter. The Bible says that Eve fell out of her role and she influenced her husband to do badly. And here we are today. Number two, Sarah. Abraham and Sarah, Genesis 16, 1 through 4, she pressured Abraham into a fleshly solution. She was unable to bear a child, even though God said she would bear a child, so she grew impatient. We can analyze the sin here, but Sarah said unto Abraham, see now the Lord has restrained me from bearing children, please go into my maid. And so Abraham, of course, will capitulate and do so, and that's a bad deal. He's taking bad advice. And look at where we are today. Do we suffer from that choice? Again, we could talk about the nature and the backdrop of impatience and how yet again a man submitted to his wife's recommendation. Bad advice. Rebecca, Isaac. Remember Rebecca and Isaac. She manipulated the covenant line through deceit in Genesis 27, 5 through 17. You remember that there's the favoritism in the context of Esau and Jacob, and yet God had said the younger from the womb who would grab the heel of Esau as they were being delivered would bear the promise, and the promise would carry through the younger and not the older. But it doesn't mean God gave Rebekah permission to be dishonest, lie to her own husband, and then again get her own son Jacob to fall into a dishonest situation, tricking and deceiving his father into giving Jacob the inheritance, the blessing. And so that causes quite the conflict. But it's another example of a woman in the Bible not giving good advice. Miriam, as a fourth example, challenged the divine appointed leadership of Moses in Numbers 12, 1 through 10, particularly Numbers 12, verse 2. The Bible says, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And she is overstepping and directly challenging the God-ordained leadership here, putting herself in a place of spiritual rivalry against Moses. And you remember what happened to Miriam. She was immediately struck with leprosy. And so again, we want to take note of some lessons throughout the Bible. Jezebel is a fifth example. Dominated, manipulated, and drove wickedness. Remember the story of Jezebel, Ahab's wicked wife. 1 Kings 16, 18, and so forth. She promoted idolatry, persecuted prophets. She manipulated her husband Ahab. She engineered the death of Naboth over his vineyard. And in fact, in 1 Kings 21, verse 7, you have this recorded statement of her to Ahab, "Do you now exercise sovereignty over Israel?" You can hear her demeaning nature. Her role was not very submissive, of course, to Ahab. And so she is mocking his weakness. She will seize control, and the results are terrible. You'll end up learning about another queen mother, Athaliah, how she'll seize and destroy the royal, she'll seize power and destroy the royal seed. Her son, who is king, she's from the household of Ahab, Jezebel. She marries into the family of Judah. Her son becomes king for a short time. I think it goes back to Jehoram, who is king, who she marries into that family line, which is the Davidic line. But her son dies through the purging of Jehu, I think. But we'll get to that in our Sunday morning and Wednesday night Bible classes. But nonetheless, this woman, Queen Mother, when her son died, she takes power and she tries to destroy by murderous means the Davidic seed line. She was smart. She knew about the promise. And so again, you have a bad example of a woman causing great injury to the people of God because of her bad actions. And so again, she will be destroyed as well. In the book of Proverbs, in Proverbs 2, and Proverbs 5, Proverbs 6, Proverbs 7, Solomon writes about the strange woman, an adulterous woman in Proverbs. And she uses seduction and speech. And the Proverbs writer repeatedly warns about the immoral woman using flattery, seduction, bold speech, manipulation, secretive invitations. In Proverbs 7, she is active, she's aggressive, she's persuasive in drawing a man into sin. And he talks about how that will lead to ruin, shame, and death. An eighth example. You remember the Herodians? You remember Herodias? How she manipulated her power to see to the destruction and the beheading of John the Baptizer when he had said, of course, it was unlawful for, I believe that would be, it was either Herod Antipas, it was Herod the Great's son who had married his brother's wife. And it was an unlawful marriage, and John the Baptizer says, "You cannot do that, that's unlawful, unscriptural." And she will again see to it that John is beheaded. So you can see the influence of a woman here. In a ninth example, remember Ananias and Sapphira. Sapphira joined in the deceit instead of submitting to the truth. She didn't have to, but she did. And so she is confronted and told in Acts 5, 1 through 10 that she conspired. Literally says when she shows up not aware that her husband had died, been put to death, Peter and the apostles say, "You have conspired." So she was a part of the evil and the wickedness that led to her own destruction and likely led to the destruction of her own husband. If again, in the beginning, God created a woman to be a man's help, suitable, meet, not mate, but help suitable, then this is where women have a tremendous responsibility to help us stay on the right track. And we need your help, but we don't need your conspiracy. We don't need your negative influence. And you can see how these negative influences impacted us. In Revelation 2:20-23, there's a woman again referred to as Jezebel at the church of Thyatira. And this may be the best example of a abuse of a power or a role with women in the church in the first century, where at Thyatira she is teaching and leading people into sin. Revelation 2:20 says, "You allow that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, to teach and seduce my servants," and they are told to eradicate that situation. It was not permissible, was not allowable. And so you can see the abuse of the role there. Again, she's claiming spiritual authority. She's teaching. So she's seducing servants of God. She's leading the church into immorality and idolatry. And then finally, getting us to our text here, in Corinth, women must have been presuming authority, lest why would Paul, by inspiration, say this is not permissible? So in the context of 1 Corinthians 14:34 through 35, we must understand that if Paul has to say and does say that let your women keep silent in the churches, something was going on here. And so we're going to look at this context a little closer and discuss what's going on. Not only here at Corinth, it must have been happening at Ephesus too. So for the sake of just time, so we're not just picking on the church at Corinth, look at 1 Timothy chapter 2 and take note that the Apostle Paul at the church of Ephesus, now this would be at Ephesus, in 1 Timothy 2 verses 11 through 15, listen to these passages, 1 Timothy 2, 11 through 15, the Apostle Paul writing to Timothy at the church of Ephesus, "Let the women learn in silence with all subjection, but I suffer not a woman to teach nor usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence." Now this would parallel 1 Corinthians 14. You remember Paul said to the church at Corinth, or the churches, that this is a thing that's this is the command of God in all the churches, not just at Corinth. And if you'll notice here, back in 1 Timothy 2, he uses the creation argument, for Adam was first formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression, notwithstanding she shall be saved in childbearing, if they continue in faith and love, charity, and holiness with sobriety. So now you have two different congregational settings, Ephesus and Corinth, and we are being told that women are to keep silence in the churches. So we have to talk about what that means in context. One other observation looking at context is in 1 Timothy chapter 2. If you go to the next chapter, chapter 3, verse 1, remember what he says regarding the role of elders and deacons. Okay, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, the role of elders and deacons, does that role, is it given to women or men? How do we know that? Because it's, yeah, it says, if a man, an elder, a man desires, and then it says that he must be married to, yeah, one wife. So that's the context here of, again, organization in a church. We're talking about authority. We're talking about order and design from creation. Now, none of this is a reflection upon the, and I like the way Leon pointed that out. Leon, are you here tonight? Yes, sir. You feeling okay? All right. So you talked about the preciousness of Jesus and his blood. And the idea of precious is value, right? So this is what this is talking about. It's talking about preciousness in the sense of value, in the sense of their role. And there are things that a woman can do. They have superpowers that men do not have, okay? And that's just a simple way and a practical way of saying it. But do you think that a woman can do, or you as a man can do everything a woman does? No, I don't think so. Yeah. In fact, I would say that there is tremendous arrogance in the society today that promotes things called feminism, illegitimate roles between women and men, and try to put women in roles that they're not really qualified for, setting them up for failure. But you try to put a man in the role of a woman, and you do the same thing. So I want you to think about, again, this is not talking about value. Today we hear this thing, equality, and I'm not even sure what people mean when they use the word equality. In fact, what do you think people are meaning when they talk about equality? You're a military young lady, pretty girl. Officer, I'm going to use you for an example. I think you and I have talked about some of this. Is it a challenge being an officer sometimes in the military, carrying authority? You probably recognize that. Do you think that, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, do you think that in the military, in a combat situation, special operations, Navy SEALs, you know, Green Berets, gritting your teeth, Delta Force guys, girls maybe, you think there's a difference? Because you think there's a difference. You remember about 4 years back, there was this push for equality in the military, as if women could do everything that a man does. And I guess, I never heard them really saying it this way, but men can do everything a woman does. I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess, right? And so I thought, you know, we might hit a dead end here and hit a brick wall and say, okay, this ain't going to work. Because after all, a man cannot do one thing. But a woman, what does the word woman mean versus the word man? Woe means what? Of or womb. Can a man have a baby? And I thought, you know, we'd figure this out. That we'd go, oh, we're a bunch of idiots here, right? Men and women are different. But no, we had to go to the point of gross dishonesty, immorality, and start making argumentation that a trans type of woman wanting to be a man, who's calling herself a man, who still has a womb, that man can have a baby. But is it a man? And I thought we had reached the height of excellence and genius and PhD and education. And we were really smart people. So there, again, are things that we know, without having to confuse the matter, that a man can do that a woman cannot do. And there are things that a woman can do that a man cannot do. And is that okay? I think that's amazing. And if we'll let God be true and every man a liar and fall in our line, then I believe we'd find a lot more peace in our lives. But we have to let corrupt and wicked men sometimes, I guess, have their way for a while. But God will judge. All right, let's talk about then 1 Corinthians 14:33 through 35. The issue here is not about whether or not a woman is capable of teaching. It's not about whether or not she should teach. She must teach, I'll argue. It's in the sense of when and where. And so it has to do with divine order and authority. In 1 Corinthians 14:33 through 35, the setting is in the church assembly. If you notice, really going back to chapter 10 and chapter 11 of 1 Corinthians, he's having to set things in order because they're not behaving well in the assembly. And if you go back in 1 Corinthians 2, chapter 10, you'll see where there is tremendous disorder. When you get to chapter 11, look at verse 2 for just a moment. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 2. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I delivered them to you. Now watch verse 3. But I would have you know that the head of every man is who? And the head of the woman is, and the head of Christ is God. And so right here you have a passage of ordinance or order, and that doesn't just apply to the church at Corinth. All right, look at what he says if you drop down. There are some things here that are obviously cultural about head coverings. And I know that some people today take that literally, and today they cover their heads. And I would be long-suffering with that, but when you start binding some of this, I would not. But nonetheless, I want you to look at verse 7. Because there is this statement where it says, a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. That is a creative argument. If you look at 1 Timothy 2, what we just read a moment ago, that's the same argument that Paul made at Ephesus, that the man was formed first and then the woman of the man. And so one thing you have to recognize here, whether you like it or not, is that this conversation is about creation. It's not just about the New Testament church. Paul's argumentation, God's argumentation, goes back to the very beginning. There is a role that men play, and there is supposed to be a role that women play. That goes back to creation. And so that's why I gave you examples of certain women throughout the Bible that didn't do so well sometimes. Now, women, have you always done perfectly as a wife to your husband? Have you made mistakes? Sure you have, and so did they. Men, have you always been perfect in your role as a man, trying to lead your home and serve in the capacity that you're supposed to serve all the days of your life? Been perfect at that in execution? No. But one thing, again, we cannot change is the fact that women have a womb and men don't, and it takes two to tango, and you know the rest of the story. And so the marriage bed's undefiled for those that are unmarried, to remind you. And so if you're going to tango, you've got to get married. All right, so in the idea here of the context, we're still talking about a creative argument. So I want you to take note of that. So then chapter 11, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 9. So neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power over her head or authority because of the angels. And that's somewhat of a mysterious passage. And so in the sense of angels being in the submissive order of the God-created design of things, angels have power, but they are not redeemable. That's another story. So again, notice how he says this in verse 11, nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Again, all things of God in the sense of judge according to the way God created things. So I ask this question again, can you change God's creation or order? You think scientists, medical physicians will be able to really change up DNA genetics to the point to where we can recreate the species? You think God's given us that power? Some things confuse us. I mean, if you're into agricultural, and they've tried to do this experimentally with human beings, is the idea of cloning. You heard about cloning? We've cloned animals, and we've done some of that. You know what has shown up, though, with cloned animals? The species or the developed cloned animal, you can do it, but always what happens is that particular animal becomes superior or less superior? It becomes less superior. They have a tremendous immune deficiency issues. And one of the things that's interesting in reproduction and so forth that I've always thought was interesting, was that when you're raising animals, and people like to raise purebred animals, like a purebred Hereford cow or something. And if you're not careful, if you raise them too pure, those animals become weak physically. So you remember the Nazis, I've mentioned this before, they were trying to breed up a superior race. You remember that? If you go back to the 1930s and 40s, they were trying to eradicate the Jewish people. But they were trying to create a blue-eyed, blonde-haired type specimen of a human being. And so they were literally working out breeding programs within the German world. But you know what would have happened if they were allowed to succeed? They would have failed, because that race would have become likely physically inferior. So do you know the strongest breeds, if you want to talk about breeding physically? You want to know the strongest breeds? Crosses. Crosses. So I've often thought it was strange that we demonized when a so-called white and a black person crossed, probably creating the strongest physical specimen physically. This has nothing to do with spirituality. But I'm saying the way we think sometimes is not true. God created us to simply go into the world, be fruitful, and multiply, and He would bless us if we did it in His order. We did it in His order. And so I've often thought about those things, the way people think in their lives. They're not thinking very well. So again, crosses in cattle, crosses in horses are often very superior health-wise, physically. So again, how many of you have heard, let the whites breed the whites and the blacks breed the blacks, Jews breed the Jews, Arabs or Arabs? Is that a true or false premise? It's not a godly premise. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? And so we can understand some of that scientifically. All right, so again, what's the issue then here in 1 Corinthians 14 about women keeping silent? The idea of keeping silence here is submissiveness. The authority here is not, again, about whether or not they can carry authority. It's about when they carry authority. It's about order and design. So look at 1 Corinthians 14, verse 40. What does that verse say? As Paul is concluding this chapter, what does 1 Corinthians 14, verse 40 say? Okay. So, does it work better when we do things according to the way God created things to be done? Always works better. Okay, and it will not provoke confusion. Another thing, too, look at verse 37 in this context. These are not suggestions. What does Paul say in verse 37 about this issue? What is he writing here? Okay, so these are the commandments of the Lord. You're again dealing with the authority, the commandments of the Lord. So I want to ask this question. In keeping silence, though, let's be fair and look at some other keep silent context. Look at chapter 14, verse 28. What does chapter 14, verse 28, if someone is speaking in an unknown tongue, that would be a language, miraculously, what does the Apostle Paul say in chapter 14, verse 28?
But if there is no interpreter, let me keep silent in church.
Okay. And then, Mark, since you jumped on it, look at verse 30. If a prophet is speaking, what does it say there in verse 30?
Well, if anything is revealed to another, he sent by, let the first keep silent.
Okay. And then finally, verse 34, in this context, you have this statement about women, and that's where he says, and let the women keep silent. So, let's think about this. Those three passages there are establishing what Brother Murray read in verse 40. Order. Let all things be done decently and in order. Now, if one had a language or a tongue in that day, and nobody spoke that language at Corinth, and say he was able to today speak Spanish. And we only have, I think, Victor speaks Spanish. Who else speaks Spanish in here? Can hear Spanish. Eli, you speak Spanish?
Poquito.
Poquito. Okay. Okay, so what would you think if we said, all right, Victor, we want you to speak in Spanish here and just take off and start preaching to us? Would that benefit us? It'd be just a waste of air and words. So they need to keep silent. Here you need to speak English, because we speak, everybody speak English? Just making sure. Can you understand what I'm saying? Hable inglés. Okay. So it's not just picking on women here. It's actually picking on the idea of order. A prophet there. A prophet must keep silent in verse 30 when another is receiving revelation. So in other words, would it make sense if Mike Bonner and Brian Braswell got to argue, I want to preach. No, I want to preach. No, I'm going to preach. And so we both got up here and we both started preaching at the same time. And I was preaching what I wanted to preach and he's preaching what he wants to preach. And I'm preaching and he's preaching. What would y'all think? So what does verse 33 and 34 say? God is not the author of what? So the issue here is really about confusion. It cannot be confusing. So you don't have two preachers preaching at the same time, or two prophets in that day and age. Would that make any sense? So then he gets to women and he says, women, you need to keep silent in the churches. Now, with that said, he's talking about women in the capacity of teaching in an authoritative way over the man. How do I know that? I know that because in 1 Timothy chapter 2 he says that. Do not usurp the authority over the man. And I've already shown you in chapter 11 of 1 Corinthians that he's making the same creative argument here at Corinth. That the man was formed first and then the woman. So the passage here has to do with authority and the order of God's creation. Women in a mixed assembly like this, do you or do you not have authority to come up here and take my spot? Why? Because you're less? Dietrich said, because that's what God said. It is. I mean, it's a matter of order. Okay, man shouldn't think more highly of himself than he ought to. So we ought to think soberly and righteously as we God has designed us. I remember one time in a Bible class, I had an elder's wife who was very outspoken. And by the way, how many people in the church really liked her? She was real outspoken. I didn't take her as a threat, but a lot of ladies didn't like her because she was real outspoken. She liked to correct everybody. She'd go around. And in a Bible class, with her husband sitting right next to her, she would almost take over the class. She would start talking. I mean, she would take control if you let her have it. Well, one day, I can't remember, I could almost say that I knew it was going to happen again. She was going to take over the class. And I made a point. She took over. You'll not know who she is. Her name was Mary. And I said, Sister Mary, you always have so much to say. Come on up here. And I invited her to come up. She was about as far as where Eli and Desiree were. I said, come on up here. She got nervous. She said, what do you mean? I said, come on up here. Kind of like the Price is Right. Come on down. And she did. She came on down and I sat right here. And I said, Mary, here's my Bible. Here are my notes. You're welcome to stick to them. Go ahead. And I did this. Go ahead, Mary. And I had her sit here because I knew it was wrong. And she said, I'm not supposed to be up here. I said, I agree. And she went and sat back down. Now, Mary knew me enough to know that I loved her. Didn't make her too happy. But what intrigued me was her husband thanked me for that. Now, I'm telling you that because that was a man that was serving as an elder. And he thanked me for that. And I thought, well, you need to get a hold of your home. Because it's not just about this. It's about the effect it's having upon the congregation here. There are people that don't like your wife because she's so obstinate. She's so pushy. She won't back down. And it affected. And I used to call some of those old ladies in that congregation the hen peckers. I did. Y'all know what a hen house looks like? Ever raised chickens? Ever gone into the hen house? I'm sorry, but I felt like it needed to be addressed. And I survived it. I did. Okay. So what we're talking about here is, again, order and authority according to creation. But something else that I want you to think about is, in this context, you're in a public assembly, and singing is involved. You remember in chapter 14? And singing is involved. And notice here, verse 15. 1 Corinthians 14, 15. What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit. I will pray with the understanding. And I will sing with the Spirit. And I will sing with the understanding also. So understanding is a big deal here too. So if we're in our assembly, it matters that we understand what we're doing. Because he'll even talk about the verse 16, someone entering into the room or the assembly that's unlearned, a non-Christian, and not understand what's being said and not be able to say amen or I agree or I can understand, and he'll think that you're mad. And he says you need to speak effectively, you need to teach effectively. And he says in verse 20, brethren, be not children in understanding. And so he's saying be children in malice and in your pettiness, but in understanding be men, be mature, speak effectively, speak intentionally so that people can understand. But back to singing. Does this exclude women from singing? No. And singing, again, is something that we do together. Together. So this is not talking about women keeping silent and saying nothing at all. It's talking about doing things decently and in order. Any comments or questions on that?
We're talking about authoritative vote. And it would be wrong for a woman to get up and lead the singing service because she has taken on a role of authority. Would you address, if you have an assembly where everybody but a handful of people, and maybe sometimes just one, who are hearing, but one or two are not here, don't have the ability to hear, would it be wrong for a woman to interpret for that one person? And let's say hypothetically it's another.
It's a great question. I think that it's a, for example, what about a sign language situation?
Yeah.
How many of you work with a deaf person? You know sign language. I don't.
Melissa feels like she does.
Melissa, I'm sorry. She's getting away from me. Okay. What is 1 Corinthians 14, verse 40 saying? Do all things decently in order. Sign language is interesting to me. Sign language. Very unique. If we had a deaf congregation, and there are some, or a deaf group, there might be a situation where over here they had the deaf group, and you got the man preaching, and you might have a woman who might be signing. What is she doing? Pardon? She's repeating. Is she usurping that authority? Would the male, say the male deaf person, take it as she's usurping the authority, or she's just serving as an interpreter?
Should take it, I think.
That's how he should take it.
I think you'd have to work through that. That's a scenario. I think it could be questioned for sure. That's why you question it. I think it can be done. I would love to train up a man to do it. Would that not be the better way to do that?
Yes.
I've seen it a lot of times where she's sitting down in the pew, you know, signing, and the person's watching. And they'll nod and they're getting an understanding. I want you to, again, think about the importance here of understanding and edification, not usurping authority. That's the key issue. I wouldn't like it personally if she was standing up here. I think it could be a distraction. I think it's pushing the envelope. So let's talk about something else since you bring that up. And I'm going to talk about the final here point about women must teach in just a moment, okay? Give me just a second here and we'll finish on time. What about churches? Okay, we sing together. We understand a woman is not... Could a woman lead singing? If you say yes, I'd say why. But why do some congregations put up on the stage women as leaders, song leaders, or part of the group? What is that? You help me understand that. What is that? What's going on with that?
Giving it to their own desires.
Does it promote order or confusion? 1 Corinthians 14 is talking about God is not the author of confusion. Women keep silent in the church in the sense of usurping authority. Don't overstep. So why would a congregation want to cloud the issue and say, okay, we're going to put two guys up here and two women up here. You know, we got four-part melody, right? Typically in our songbooks, and that's probably what is that doing? What does that do? Does that push the envelope? I have a better question in my mind. Why would a woman want to do that? Why would the woman say, I want to be up there? Or say, better off, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do anything to promote confusion. And so I struggled with Johnson Street. They allow that. I don't know why they do that. I'm not trying to question, but I have a right to ask questions about it. It promotes confusion, if you ask me, and it's pushing the envelope. It opens the door. It ain't pushing. I'm trying to be nice here.
When we were living in Alabama, there was an actual sign language community there in the congregation. And there was one man that always was up front signing. But there was also another woman there. You know, they're both, they can hear and they can sign. She didn't want to be up front during that part of the service.
I admire that. I think that sounds...
We did take a sign language class while we were there, so there's a little bit of knowledge there for our family, but there's another challenge.
Okay.
Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Question for everybody. Why was it not wrong? Let's go ahead and say something. Because it's what? A class. This is a class. This is not a worship.
I didn't think about that because I'm used to this being a class.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a class.
We're here because you, Brother Roy, Brother Smith, and Brother Mike want us here. We want to be here, obviously, for us to learn. We need to worship this morning.
Yep. Worship this morning.
We're building this up and keeping us together.
Yes. I agree. Jamie? Yeah, your comments are very good, very submissive in my sense, adding to the discussion, not taking over the class. That's my point on Mary, quite contrary. I loved her. She was sweet, very community active, but she would take over a class. Am I right or wrong, Gina? You have a right to affirm. Confirm this. I was not just being mean to Mary. Mary, quite contrary. All right, I want you to look at something else. Again, this is a Bible class, and this would be like us kind of sitting in our home and me going to your house, and I would have a right, say Natasha and Dietrich invited me over, and she would have a right to talk to me, or we could talk back and forth, and in that sense, very orderly. But yes, in a worship service, it would be certainly different. I want you to see this passage here in 1 Corinthians 14, and I need to wrap this up.
1 Corinthians 14, verse 9. Notice how there is this desire by authority to be understood again simply. So he's talking about speaking in the languages that were unknown at the day, and miraculously the Holy Spirit would enable one to speak with an unknown language to, again, if you're able to speak with a language that someone needs to hear, what is the purpose of that? To convey understanding. But watch what he says there in verse 9. How shall it be known what is spoken? For you shall speak into the air. I've always thought that was interesting. What would it benefit you if you knew the gospel of Jesus Christ and you went and tried to preach it to the mesquite tree back here in the back and you just started preaching to the tree? What would it benefit? It'd be speaking in the air. Be a waste of words. So that passage always stands out. So again, just think about the overall context. Now, two contexts. Let's go back to 1 Timothy 2 and Titus chapter 2 briefly. I look back, and I said this yesterday to Gina, as our kids are getting older, and you can all relate, I'm starting to reflect back and go, I hope I spent enough time with my kids. I'm starting to see and feel that. And so as Danielle was driving off to Sonora after we took pictures with Mark and Maya, senior pictures, and she's going off to see her buds, and it's getting close to her graduation, her moving off, I'm starting to feel as a dad, did I spend enough time with my child? But I know one person that did spend a lot of time with my child, because I see their activity, I see their attitudes, I see who taught them and taught them where very well. In the home. So women, you must teach. So look at 1 Timothy chapter 2 again. What does that last passage say there in chapter 2 about the role of a woman in the home?
Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness.
All right. So a man, Eli, you got to go to work, don't you? So who's at home taking care of the baby by design or by order, by God's creation typically? Should be the woman. And that's why, men, it's important that you marry a woman that'll take care of your kids. Because when you get to my age or you're my parents' age or like Royce, you're going to look back and you're going to say, what's more important than anything else? Knowing that your kids are moving off. Yeah. And who is it that's going to keep them grounded at home, in childbearing, in raising, in nurturing, in helping? It's going to be that mama. Look at Titus chapter 2, and we'll start to wrap this up. Titus chapter 2, notice verse 3. Women, aged women here, have a tremendous responsibility. Verse 3. Aged women, likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers. That's those henpeckers, by the way. Do you know why I call them henpeckers? So on every Tuesday at the church office, it would be bulletin folding day. Manual. We didn't have automated systems. And a group of the inner circle of the church ladies would come up to the church building and sit around and fold bulletins. Well, innocent enough, right? But as I sat in the next office over and I listened to them talk week after week after week, their conversation was always henpecking. And guess what they were henpecking? All the people in the church and the ladies they didn't like. And I don't just hear about so-and-so. And it went on and on. And I finally said, y'all are a bunch of henpeckers. And that's what I called them. And they would make fun of their husbands, how mean some of them were. I'd hear them talk bad about their husbands, and I thought, this is not good. This is a time for y'all, not for good, but for bad. And I broke that up over time. I can fold these bulletins by myself. They were not being nice. One of them used to talk about taking her happy pill all the time because she couldn't put up with her husband. That's a fact. And so I would often pick at her and say, yeah, I go home and take a shot of that whiskey just so I can go to sleep at night because I can't put up with Gina. "Oh, that drinking's terrible." I said, "Well, what's the difference? You're taking an antipsychotic pill because you can't put up with your husband. I'm having a hard time understanding how you're speaking so openly about that. Maybe we ought to work some of that out." That's an attitude. All right, Titus chapter 2, aged women. You need to be holy, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God not be or be not blasphemed. That's order. Right there's your orderly creative design. And so women must teach. I can tell you this. Where's Libby? Is she here? Libby? 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 She's wondering why it's your birthday. We're not going to sing that again, but I guarantee you, if Libby had a choice between me or Gina, who she was going to come to, who do you think she would run to first? She's not running to me. But guess what? She's been to my house several times and stayed at my house. And I think I've been good to Libby. But I can tell you this, that one day on the way out, Mom and Dad came to pick her up. She loves Gina. And I said something about giving her a hug or something. And I don't remember. What did she say? She said, "At my house, in my driveway, I don't like you." But I'm glad she likes Tita. And she can come back anytime she wants. Because we do have a good time. But I'm saying that because I don't really think it'd be natural if she liked me all that much. She needs to love Gina. Women are beautiful. They have a wonderful role, but just not in the pulpit here, in the public assembly, or even in a Bible class like this. This is not your role. This is a time for us to be edified and do things in the way God designed it to be done. Royce, final statement.
And finally, the women have such a powerful role. Who were the two main influences of Timothy when he was a child?
That's right.
His mother, his grandmother. Now, it doesn't even talk about a father involved
in that.
I'm just saying, what a role they have. It's a beautiful role,
powerful
role.
This is tremendous. You know, these women today that take authority, I even struggle with politicians. I haven't gotten petty on you or into my hobbies. But that whole thing about the first woman president, okay, y'all don't pay for this one, but I'm not so sure God gave them that authority for that either. I don't know. You can check me on that, and we can talk about it later. I'm talking about the church here, but thank you for at least listening to me.